This is Life Was But a Flower, written by Night Rose and read by Dipsy Kitty. He knows exactly what Combe Fair is going to say before he's even lifted the stethoscope from his chest. It doesn't take an expert to know what's wrong with someone who's been coughing up flowers and blood for the last 6 months. "Why didn't you tell anyone earlier?" Combe Fair scolds. "There are treatments available." Grantaire just stares at him, and he, thankfully, shuts up. Everyone knows there's only one treatment for Hannah Hockey that actually works. Oh, they can put you on strong antifungals that will suppress the floral growths, for a while rotting your liver and ensuring you throw up anything you eat. They can eventually fit you for a respirator, which works fine until it doesn't, until the flowers overgrow your dead lungs and stop your heart. They've even tried transplants. And then you get a few months of breathing easy until the flowers grow in the new tissue as well. There's only one thing that can save you. If you tell the person you love how you feel, and they feel the same way. It's a great medical mystery how on earth a disease could know something as psychological, as human, as romantic love. It's also the reason Hannah Hockey is often a death sentence. "You do know what they say," Combe Fair says delicately. He does. "They say that the flowers only blossom because it's meant to be, because the other person loves you back." That's obviously bullshit. How would a disease know how someone else feels? Besides, in his particular case, he knows exactly how impossible it is that his beloved could ever feel the same way he feels. Hannah Hockey is a death sentence for Grantaire. It's almost a relief. As he told Combe Fair, Grantaire had absolutely no intention of ever actually telling Enjolras how he felt. Combe Fair was a good doctor who would keep his condition a secret, even after he died, so there was no reason anyone ever had to know. It actually seemed kind of pleasantly tragic, choking on flowers. Better than dying from rejection, which was just pathetic. Unfortunately, as usual, things didn't go Grantaire's way. It happens after a meeting. He knows he should have stopped going now that the disease is affecting him, obviously. He's getting paler, losing weight, and coughing up flowers at least once a day. Petals he can hide in a handkerchief, though his friends tease him for such a seemingly old-fashioned habit, but whole flowers are harder. At the very least, he should have stopped lingering afterwards, soaking up the few minutes he gets alone with Enjolras. The leader doesn't pay any particular attention to him at these times. He's usually absorbed in a conversation with his lieutenants or looking over his notes, not paying any mind to the drunkard sitting in the back with his sketchbook. The flowers are always worst after he's been around Enjolras. But he can't help himself. He has to take what little he can get, even if he pays for it in flowers and blood. It's roses this time, which are the worst. Because of their sharp thorns, they always come up drenched in blood. Often they scrape up his throat so badly that he can't speak for minutes afterwards. There are tears in his eyes and red blood on the table, mimicking the red of the single pristine rose that lies in front of him when he's finished coughing it up. And Enjolras is looking right at him, his bright blue eyes piercing. Has he ever looked at Grantaire before? Let alone like this, with the full intensity of his angelic gaze. It makes Grantaire wish he weren't dying, in the vague hope that one day Enjolras might look at him like that again. Then Enjolras is crossing the room, pressing his own handkerchief to Grantaire's lips and wiping away the blood, one warm, steady hand rubbing his back. He's definitely never touched Grantaire before, and it feels so damnably right. Even though Grantaire knows it isn't, this can't be meant to be, or someone like him wouldn't be blooming for someone like Enjolras. He was only ever meant to admire Enjolras, with his brilliance and his austere perfection and his fierce intelligence and his devotion to what's right, from afar. This shouldn't be happening. "How long has this been going on?" Enjolras asks. "A few years," Grantaire replies truthfully. "It's gotten worse lately. Whole flowers. Blood." Enjolras evidently knows what that means, And a hockey can be unpredictable, but generally it doesn't take longer than 5 years from the first petals to the end. And when whole flowers are blooming, that end is in sight. Who is it? He asks, because that's always the next question. Have you told them? There's only one answer he can make. The thing is, Grantaire hasn't been particularly devoted to the idea of dying with his secret untold. He doesn't think it romantic or even necessary. It's just that he doesn't get a lot of chances to talk to Andelros like this, just the two of them, where he could even imagine making this confession. But now he can. Now there's no one else in the Maison, and the candles are burning low, and he's going to die anyway. He might as well tell the truth before he does. His love for Andelros is the best thing about him, by a long shot. He likes the idea of that being what's remembered about him when he's gone. Grantaire turns around, so he's facing Andelros. He meets his gaze, which isn't easy, and swallows hard, and says, simply and clearly, "It's you, of course." Then he stands up, shaky on his feet after the pain and the loss of blood, and walks out of the room. It's 18 hours before Andelros starts knocking on his door. Grantaire spends them in a stupor. Combeferre had prescribed him something for the pain, and he uses it to its full effect now. He'd be worried about addiction, except that he's going to be dead in under a year anyways, so it's not like he needs to worry about the long-term health of his organs. Pretty soon, he won't be using them. Andelros knocks for a while before Grantaire gives up and lets him in. He catches Andelros mid-knock, his long golden hair tousled, his cheeks flushed red. "I was hoping I could come in," he says.
"Somehow I deduced that," Grantaire replies. "Welcome to my palace."
Grantaire's home, like Grantaire himself, is a disaster. It's a one-room flat, absolutely strewn with notes and half-read, much underlined books, and sketches, mostly of Andelros, but hey, the secret is out. Not to mention dirty dishes and other tasks of housekeeping that Grantaire has carefully made himself blind to, and which now he can't stop noticing, with Andelros's eyes on this particular set of his failures. Most of all, there are flowers everywhere, covered in blood and mucus. White gardenia rots in a corner. Tiny purple violets are mangled from their violent expulsion from Grantaire's mouth. And everywhere red. Tulips, roses, immense vivid camellias. At least the long strands of lavender smell good.
"Can I get you anything?"
Grantaire offers. Because that's what you do. Even though he's fairly sure the entire contents of his kitchen are a bottle of souring wine and a mostly empty jug of whiskey. Andelros shakes his glorious head.
"No, thank you. I just came here to talk." "About my confession of love? Or the fact that I'm dying?"
It's supposed to be a joke, but it doesn't quite sound like one.
"I've been thinking a lot," Andelros says firmly. "And I've come to a decision." "Oh? There's something extremely final in that tone." "I love you too."
Grantaire's first reaction is to laugh. An expression of something, could it be hurt, flashes over Andelros's sculpted features.
"He isn't going to save me," he says. "I guess I appreciate the gesture, but, you know, it has to be real."
"It is," Andelros insists. And part of Grantaire starts to believe him even then. That's his curse, he supposes. He can't bring himself to mistrust Andelros, even though what he's saying is absurd.
"I didn't recognize it at first, that's all. I didn't think of it.
But when you said that, I've been torturing myself all day, trying to understand why I felt so sure that it was wrong, that I couldn't let this happen to you. It's not just because we're friends, or the general goodwill I feel towards anyone who's ill."
"We're friends?"
Grantaire asks, which Andelros ignores completely.
"That was how I realized. I love you too."
And as Andelros sweeps him up in a kiss, Grantaire is incredibly grateful for the disease, in spite of the aching pain in his lungs as Andelros leaves him breathless. The flowers don't stop blooming.
I don't even slow down. Actually, they're getting worse and worse. In the morning, he coughs up roses. Pale orange-pink now, not blood-red. Enjolras says it has to be a good sign. Beautiful pale yellow blooms come out of him in clusters. Long, pale green stems covered in small white flowers, which Jeon identifies as snapdragons with a curious look at the specimen Grandterre brought him. Things are getting better, or at least lighter. Enjolras tries to tell him it means things are improving, that it's only a matter of time. They're fading. That means they're taking less of you. But Enjolras is not, of course, content to just wait and see. That isn't his way with anything, and it isn't in his relationship with Grandterre either. He drags Grandterre to every doctor in the city, even though the visits are consistently horrible. They usually end up implying that Grandterre is wrong and must actually be in love with someone else, or the blooms would have stopped. Either that, or they just tell him that Hanahaki is rare, poorly understood, that they can't help him. The thing is, Grandterre isn't feeling better. The flowers might look less threatening now they're pale and delicate instead of huge and blood red, but he's still coughing them up more and more frequently, every hour or so now. Eating is painful, because the roots have spread down to his stomach, crowding out room that should be for food. His throat is always torn and bloody, and it's hard to talk. So he and Enjolras take sign language classes together. Enjolras makes him a lot of soft, pureed soups and smoothies, which are almost universally disgusting. Enjolras is not a good cook. When he's in too much pain to get out of bed, Enjolras sits beside him and reads to him so he won't be alone with the knowledge that he's dying, and there's nothing either of them can do to save him. Every night, as he's falling asleep in Enjolras' arms, he dares to ask. Only in the dark can he face his greatest fear. Are you sure you love me? It's not, I don't know, a trick or a mistake or... Like a ritual, Enjolras answers. He gently kisses Grandterre's forehead. I love you, he answers. So much. And we're going to get through this together. There are good days, too. Of course there are. He's with Enjolras now. In all of his fantasies of them together, and he'd had a lot even before the flowers started blooming, he had imagined that he would be the one to do most of the work of romance in their relationship. It just doesn't seem like Enjolras's strength. He plans rallies, not dates, and gives speeches, not flowers. Well, he doesn't give Grandterre flowers. That would be an extremely poor taste. And besides, their apartment, Enjolras having essentially moved himself in without so much as a buyer leave, is already filled with far too many flowers. Grandterre used to insist they be disposed of, but he caught Enjolras looking longingly at a withered violet as he was taking the compost out and finally agreed he could save a few. He presses them now, an incongruous hobby for such a fierce man. They don't speak of it. But Grandterre knows he's saving them in case the worst happens. No flowers, then, but other gifts. Chocolates and wine. And then later, books he knows Grandterre will like. Knick-knacks he's found at the flea market for Grandterre's various weird collections. Interesting spices for the occasional day when Grandterre is up for cooking. When he's feeling all right, they go all over Paris together. Enjolras insists that Grandterre take him to the tiniest little museums that focus on one obscure artist, and tell him every detail of their career. He takes Grandterre's restaurant recommendations with gusto. On sunny days, they walk to Île Saint-Louis and then past Notre Dame with their ice creams, watching the rebuilding, and on cold ones they go for outrageously expensive hot chocolate. Enjolras eats his with a spoon in dainty, precise little bites, and Grandterre makes fun of him. They're happy, even though Grandterre, in spite of Enjolras's best efforts, still seems to be dying. They're happy. Every night, just as he's falling asleep, Enjolras tells him, I love you. Every morning when he wakes up, those are the first words he hears. When he's shaking and coughing and bleeding, Enjolras rubs his back and holds him close and tells him, I love you, I love you. Maybe he ought to doubt it. He's seen enough skeptical looks from doctors and even their friends that he can't exactly forget what most people must be thinking. If he's still dying, then they can't really be in love. Something, either Enjolras' feelings or his own, have to be a lie. And Grantaire knows for a fact that he loves Enjolras, that he always had. So he should doubt Enjolras. Certainly, if someone had described this situation to him a year ago, he would have laughed. It would have been so obvious that Enjolras was faking it. Guilty or embarrassed, the Grantaire was blooming for him, trying to make it better and then stuck in a lie he can't escape from. He would have been baffled at the idea that he could ever have believed it. But now, with Enjolras saying it every day. When Enjolras' warm lips are on his bare shoulder as he helps Grantaire dress when his hands are weak and shaking, he can't doubt it. Nor when they're walking hand in hand, Grantaire sometimes needing to lean on him a little bit, sometimes able to hold himself up, Enjolras' encouraging smiles and words with him all the way. When Enjolras proudly introduces him to new members as my boyfriend, Grantaire, he's telling the truth. When one of those new members sees Grantaire pulling a rose stem out of his mouth and asks if he has that pathetic disease, and Enjolras breaks his nose with one sharp punch, Grantaire is certain. Enjolras loves him. Maybe the declaration of love came too late. Maybe Grantaire has some other disease, heretofore unknown by science. Maybe he just has absolutely shitty luck. But this, the two of them together, this is real. Grantaire always believed in Enjolras, after all. At the end, Enjolras never leaves his side. All they can do for Grantaire at the hospice is make him comfortable. After Enjolras gets in a furious fight with one nurse who suggests that maybe Grantaire should confess to his real lover, like there could ever be anyone else for him, they're pretty respectful. They're probably afraid of Enjolras, which is understandable, because he's terrifying and wonderful. And all that energy is focused on Grantaire right now. Grantaire tries a few times to send him away, even just to sleep in a real bed instead of a chair at his bedside for a few hours. But Enjolras just glares at him, kisses his forehead, and says, "I'm not going anywhere." So he stays. He brings Grantaire ice cubes to suck on, which momentarily relieve the pain in his throat, and make sure he's getting his pain medicine every 6 hours on the dot. On the few occasions when Grantaire is lucid, he just talks to him. He tells Grantaire how grateful he is for the time they had together, how much it means to him that he got to be with him even for these few short months. He thanks him for teaching him so much, for showing him what it means to be happy, for loving him the way no one has ever loved him, as a man, not a symbol. He promises never to forget him, not if he lives another 100 years. He doesn't try to say it's going to be okay, not anymore, because it isn't. But at the end, as a riot of flowers bursts out of Grantaire's chest, ripping through the skin, their pale petals dusted with blood, he's right there, holding Grantaire's hand. Enjolras visits his grave every day. In torrential rain, under flurries of snow, it doesn't matter. Nothing keeps him from his appointment with Grantaire. He brushes snow or an invisible fragment of dust off the gravestone, where it reads, "René Grantaire, always loved and always missed," followed by dates of birth and death, only 2 decades apart. He always leaves fresh flowers. Grantaire would appreciate the irony. Only thus does he tell the truth. He leaves coral pink roses on Grantaire's grave. Friendship and sympathy. Pity, maybe, Grantaire would have called it, but he isn't here to antagonize Enjolras. And white snapdragons, for deception. "I'm sorry," he says, to the stone-cold air, to the cold stone, to Grantaire, who will never answer him again, never laugh at him, never love him. "I tried, but it wasn't good enough, and he knows that." He feels numb. "I love you," he says, waiting for the Lansing guilt that's gone through his heart every time he told this lie. It doesn't come. Instead, he feels something he's never felt before. A strange, nauseous pain in his gut. He starts to cough, then to retch. It's several long, horrible minutes before something comes up. A vivid purple orchid, already in full bloom, lies in the snow, covered in his blood. The end.